Oh, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Thursday Night Live. This is Frankie. Hi, what's up, everyone? If you can hear me loud and clear, please type one in the comment box so that I know everything is working smoothly and we are not facing any technical issue. Okay, if you can hear some background noises also, it's because we are doing some recording in the background. So, yeah. US announced rate cut. No, US didn't announce rate cut. We will go into that topic really, really shortly. But if you can hear me loud and clear, please type one in the comment. Okay, fantastic. Now I can see people starting to comment. Okay, so that means everything is good. Now, as you can see today, I'm alone again. And I notice every time when I am doing the live alone, we tend to go deep into the market. I'm not sure whether you guys realize that or not. But anyways, today, yeah, indeed, we are going to go deep down into the market. And I find today's topic very interesting, right? Because we have some juicy news that just came out from the US just yesterday. And I think the news that came out yesterday is going to affect the market at least in the next 6 to 9 months. Yeah, and who is already starting to feel rich and they feel that, wow, ini kali lah, right? This is the time that I can start making money. It feels good, you know, sentiment is great and I can see everything green and all that. If you are feeling that sentiment, can you please type two in the comment box, right? Type two in the comment box if you are feeling optimistic about the market, the economy and stuff like that. And what I'm trying to say is that, can you imagine just 1 week ago, we are just talking about, the economy is not doing very great. You know, whatever we see now is maybe it could be illusion and everything could be because there are still a lot of liquidity in the market. And, you know, there's still this last leg to push. And after that leg is done, then most likely we will fall into a recession. But suddenly yesterday, that one piece of news just changed the entire world's sentiment, and today it looks like later after we end the show, the US market is going to open. Chances are it's going to fly up very beautifully, and we are already seeing some reaction on the bond market and also the crypto market as well. So Bitcoin is going up, bond prices are going up, and as a result of that, bond yields are coming down. So we are going to deep dive into what actually happened, and could it really happen? And how is it going to affect our investment in 2024? So I think today the toughest jobs are the economists who predicts how the market is going to perform in the future, right? Just 1 week ago, things are different. This week, things become different again. I think so, without further ado, let's dive straight into our topic, right? Okay, so what happened is that, let me just give you a background. So yesterday, the Fed just finished their usual meeting, right? And then they come out to say that, oh, we are not going to increase the interest rate this time. We are going to pause it at 5.5%. Yeah, very boring because the whole world knows that they are not going to increase the interest rate, right? And throughout the whole month or so, the Fed chairman has already said that, you know, they are going to keep interest rate at this level for a longer period of time. Why they want to do that is because inflation is still very high. Yes, we are starting to see inflation to be more tame and not so aggressive. But nonetheless, we are still talking about 3% of inflation compared to the Fed's target is at 2%. So if you think like that, right, they're still 50% away from their KPI, right, so to speak. And because of that, the Fed decided that they want to keep interest rate that way. But what is interesting is in the comments after the Fed chair say that they are keeping interest rate at 5.5%, is that they say it looks like inflation is coming down and the Fed actually has two mandates. Now, he's correct, right? The Fed actually have two very important KPIs that they need to achieve. Number one, obviously, is inflation, right? And inflation is the headline that we see every day. So, yeah, we are all familiar with that. The second mandate, the second KPI that they have is actually to control unemployment. Unemployment means people who are not employed, with jobs. They are jobless. They are jobless means they got no money. No money to spend means you have a lot of problem, right? So one of the Fed's KPI is to make sure the unemployment rate in the US stays at a healthy level. Now, what is a healthy level? textbook answer, textbook answer is between the range of 2% to 3%. Then you may have this question, the best answer should be 0%, man. Everybody is employed, everybody makes money, then the world got no problem, man, right? Now, that is an ideal world. That is a utopia. In real world, unemployment rate can never be zero. The reason is because there are people who just naturally don't want to work, right? These people, they are categorized as unemployed as well. Secondly, there are people who are in transition from one job to another job, right? So these people, if they cannot capture during the snapshot that all these central bankers are doing their analysis, then suddenly, then they fall into the category of unemployment. So, yeah. But those unemployment will go away, right? Once they shift into the new jobs, then yeah, the level will come down a bit. So the point I want to make is that there are actually many, many reasons why unemployment rate cannot be zero. And therefore, the textbook answer of a healthy unemployment rate in an economy is about 2 to 3%. And today, the US unemployment rate is roughly around 3.7%. Then you would say, 3.7% is not your textbook answer, that means they're not healthy, right? But you need to think from a different perspective, you know. During Obama's time, right, the unemployment rate was as high as, if I recall correctly, was 9 to 10%. So every 100 people, you have 10 people jobless in the US. But today it has gone down to 3.7%. So that is a big, big, big improvement, right? And therefore, it's considered quite healthy and the Fed acknowledged that. And because of these two factors, it's doing quite well. So they have this idea that they don't want to make the same mistake again. What is the mistake? Now, if you guys can recall, right, during the pandemic, we have a new wave of new investors who in the past never invested before, but suddenly they become expert and then they started to plow money into stocks, into crypto and stuff like that. But during that time, interest rate was low and subsequently what happened was all this inflation and all that. And then this group of investors, they experienced the aggressiveness of the central bank increasing the interest rate. But the mistake that the Fed made during that time was that they were too reactive instead of being proactive. They keep waiting for the economic numbers to say, okay, now my inflation number is 5% already. Okay, therefore I increase the interest rate by 25 basis points, for example. Then they wait again. Wait until, reports come out and say that, now inflation is at 7%. Oh shit, right, 2% more already. I need to do something. Let's increase the interest rate again. Increase another 0.25%. They were very reactive. And as a result of that, inflation went ahead and the Fed was just doing a catch-up. So that was the mistake that they made. This time round, in order not to make that mistake, they are saying that maybe they want to be ahead of the market. So while inflation hasn't reached their target of 2%, but if you guys recall, if you tune in to our Thursday Night Live every week, I've mentioned this before that the interest rate effect is a lagging effect. Why? When you increase the interest rate today, you will not feel the impact today. You will only feel it when it's the time you need to pay your mortgage and then suddenly your bank tells you, interest rate increase already, this month better pay 200 extra. Then suddenly you're terkena, right? So there's a lagging effect there. Same as well. So going forward, they don't want to make the same mistake again. So they want to be ahead. They want to start cutting the interest rate even before inflation number comes down to 2%. And then you know, right? Whatever decision you do, right? When you are in that kind of authority, right? People sure complain, man. Just like people in Malaysia also the same. When the government say give you subsidy, we all complain. Say you spend a lot of money, right? When the government say, okay lah, I take away subsidy and then use this subsidy to do something else, we also complain. We say we are living so sad already and then you still somehow take away our subsidy. So it's very hard to please people. In the US, it's also the same. So now the Fed say that, okay, I don't want to make the same mistake again. I want to be ahead. So I think I want to cut interest rate in 2024. All these arguments started to come now, right? They say that, your inflation rate is still at 3%. You haven't reached victory yet. Then suddenly you start cutting interest rate. What if suddenly inflation comes back? it's a fair statement, right? And I think it's a very, very valid statement. And I am actually in that camp, in that school of thoughts, that I think we should keep the... Well, okay, whether they want to cut the interest rate or not is one thing, but announcing it to the market is a different thing. Because if you think about it, right, yesterday the Fed announced that they may cut interest rate in 2024. Anything change? Nothing change. Is it confirmed that interest rate is going to cut? No. It's still same as yesterday. But the market is already starting to price in that the Fed may cut interest rate in 2024. And because they know what are the consequences to the market when interest rate is coming down, they start to buy up all the assets first. So therefore, it's very important for us as a new group of investors who's just started to come into the market during the pandemic, who has only experienced interest rate hike before but never experienced an interest rate cut, to understand and feel what could actually happen when such thing happens. And then you can plan ahead, and then whether you believe the Fed will cut the interest rate or not, yeah, then you react accordingly, lah, right? So if I want to end today's podcast, right, I can end it now already. Why? Because in order to understand what are the impact to the market by cutting interest rate, the answer is it's completely opposite from when the Fed increased the interest rate. Okay, thank you very much. Good night. Right? So basically it is as simple as that. But I think I want to, break it down a little bit further so that you can appreciate where are all these forces coming from and pushing up the market, pushing up asset prices, and maybe lead to inflation again, and then we're all back to square one, right? So this is the gist of today's topic. Okay, so think about it, right? When the central bank starts to cut interest rate, suddenly your borrowing cost becomes cheaper. All right, borrowing costs become cheaper. People will start borrow money again. When people start borrow money again, what do? They spend, right? Takkan you borrow money and put under the pillow, right? Hey, no need to pay interest. Right? So they will start to spend. When they spend, it creates demand. And again, if the supply cannot keep up with the demand, we have this thing called the demand pull inflation. That means I only have one iPhone here, but there are 10 people lining up to buy my iPhone. Hey, I think I sell 10,000, also got people buy, right? So that's the point. And in 2024, the Fed indicated that they may cut as much as 0.75%. Yeah, 0.75%. So from 5.5%, they want to bring it down to 4.6% in 2024. Usually that's a fair statement because you give 1 year forecast to the market. But I think the Fed is making mistake again, and this mistake comes from, apart from giving guidance to the market of what they intend to do in 2024, they went ahead to tell you what they want to do in 2025 and 2026 as well. And that is what making the market become so euphoric and so hyped up and say, wow, you know, this ini kali lah, this is the time that I want to chong. Why? 2024, 0.75% cut. Okay, fair. I get the point, right? You don't want the market to be too tight. You want to loosen it a little bit. Okay. But in 2025, they also say that they may cut interest rate 4 times. So if you think about it, if each time is 0.25%, 4 times would be a complete 1%. So from 4.6%, it will down to 3.6%. 3.6%. And they didn't even tell you in 2026, they may cut another 3 times, another 0.75%. So it will bring it down again to about 2% like that. So from 5.5 today, and in 2.5 years' time, you're going to cut 50% down, all the way down to 2%. Isn't that exact opposite of what we are experiencing today, right? And we have experienced before when the Fed increased the interest rate so aggressively 11 times in the span of 2 years, the amount of money we lost in the market, the the mortgage that we need to pay, the extra money that we need to service our debts and all that, it's all hurting us. And within 2 years' time, all these things, all this pain is going to go away. And that is the reason why I see somebody right there, right? Because this guy is so optimistic and they are feeling so rich just because of that sentiment. And I think that's the mistake. I think somehow it's either they intentionally want to make this mistake, want to make the market feel good, or I don't know, they just feel desperate and they are trying to do something. They think they want to do something smart, but they are actually killing the market faster. Right? But if I want to find a justification of why the Fed is giving such a guidance to the market so far ahead, where I don't even know whether tomorrow there's going to be rain or earthquake or not, and they tell you 3 years down the road they're going to cut interest rate that much, it's because 2024 will be the year of election in the US. Election year 2024 in the US. And usually during election year, politicians or central bankers, economies, investors, they always hope for at least a steady market. Why they want a steady market is because then at least one variable is taken care of. They don't need to worry so much about the economy. They can focus on just politics itself, because we all know politics can be very headache, right? So if one headache is not enough, you're going to introduce economic problems or more. Wow, I cannot imagine, right? So no matter which profession you are, whether you are economists, you are bankers, you are politicians, you are central bankers, everybody's objective is the same. I want a steady market. And in order to create the steadiness in the market today, with the condition that we have discussed before in the past several episodes, right? All the bad things that we have talked about. One way to do it is to hype up everybody, lo. Right? So you forget all the bad things about the economy. You only think of, wow, if interest rate comes down, money is so easy to get. I can borrow 100,000 and I use all these 100,000 to buy Bitcoin. And if everybody does the same, Bitcoin is going to go to $1 million. Wow, that's like dream come true, right? So I think if I want to justify their action of doing that, it will be because of this. If not, I don't see the reason why they want to give you a guidance of 3 years. Usually, if you are an investor in the stock market, you also know maximum also they give you 1.5 years to 2 years, right? And why they are able to tell you their 2 years guidance going forward is because today they are putting in the capex to build the capacity for 1 year, 2 year down the road. So they can expect what to get 2 years down the road. But with the global economy, it's much harder to predict. You got geopolitical tension, you got climate change, you got 1 million and one things to think about, right? So so that's my point. But there's one more important thing that I want to point out is that we need to be very careful with this hyped up situation that we are experiencing right now. And in fact, if you look back past history, always right before a recession, we will experience this kind of euphoric market, right? Everything looks good. It's just like, you know how Chinese people say, before you pass away, before you end your life, that 1 week before your expiry date, right, you will suddenly become very healthy and become very alert, you become very cheerful and all that. And usually that is the sign of your last energy to say goodbye to your friends and family. Yeah, so I think we are in that situation right now, right? Yes, today everybody is very excited, everybody is very happy, we're making money, market is very good, but that is usually an indication of a recession. And let me explain why. It's a very valid reason. Okay, let's say the Fed is really going to cut interest rate in 2024, right? From 5.5% to 4.6%. And today, you want to buy a house. Will you buy a house today? I don't know about you. I won't. Why? I won't buy a house today because interest rate is high and I don't want to borrow money at 5.5% interest rate. But I may buy a house in 2024 when the interest rate is 4.6%. Maybe even not, because in 2026, it may even go down to 3% or 2%. So I'm going to wait. Right? If everybody starts waiting, the economy is going to stop. Nobody is going to spend. Right? When nobody spends with the expectation that things is going that way, then yala, naturally, you don't even need to do anything, recession will come. Right? Think about it. But of course, then you can argue, right? Interest rate down, it means that all these businesses, they don't need to service their interest rate that much. If they don't do that, then that means they have more profit. When they have more profit, they can pay higher dividend. Then stock market can still do better, right? But that is just one aspect of profitability. But what if the action of people not spending is more amplified than the interest savings that you get from the interest rate cut? You still have a net negative to the entire economy, right? So it is not a really good thing. And usually this euphoric phase of the market is a sign that the worst is coming. Yeah. Of course, if you talk to the Fed, then they disagree lah. They say, no. Whatever we are doing now is pointing towards a soft landing. Soft landing means we won't go into recession. Everything just will be a little bit slower and it will slide down, glide down smoothly, and then it will start taking off again. It's easier said than done. Why? Now, when we talk about soft landing, the first thing that comes to mind is usually aircraft. Aircraft, when they do a landing, a soft landing means it's a smooth landing on the runway, and then it comes to a stall, and then it stops. Oh, everybody happy. Sometimes people even clap their hands. Oh, good pilot, good flying skills. Well, that's for aircraft lah. But in economy, it's not like that one. Because economy doesn't stop. Not like aircraft. Aircraft stops. So while a plane soft landing is like that, and economy is usually like that. Oh, shit, sorry. Overshot already. Overshot. Faster, do something. Okay, then you change the situation. Hey, too much. You faster change again. Then you go down, right? So this is a real economy. The economy works like that. And therefore, the Fed, which is at the pilot seat, at the cockpit, their responsibility is not really to steer towards a soft landing, but to manage the range so that your economy don't go away from that range. I think that's a good soft landing enough. But with what the Fed has done in the past, increasing interest rates so fast, so aggressive and all that, it has over-tightened the monetary policy in the US, which caused all the problems that we are all facing today. And now they are trying to reverse everything so quickly within 2 years. 3 times 2024, 4 times 2025, 3 times 2026. That's like another as aggressive as how they went up, right? If suddenly everything comes down so fast, right? Yeah. I think instead of soft landing, I think they may overshot and go underground for a while before they come back up. Right? So that is my worry over there. But I don't know what you guys think. Maybe you guys have a different opinion, you can put it in the comment box. We can discuss it later, right? But nonetheless, people are starting to talk about what are the assets to buy in a low interest rate environment, right? Because in the past, what we have experienced is interest rate hike, So interest rate high, I think people sort of know what to do already. Avoid some sectors. You can look at play some currency play here and there and whatnot. So what about when interest rate is low? What are the stocks that you can look at, right? Number one, actually, we sort of touched it a little bit already. Number one, we should look at sectors that are interest rate sensitive. What are sectors that are interest rate sensitive? The one biggest one would be property. no magic there. I've already given examples why. Because when interest rate are, when the interest rate is low, you will trigger people to buy more properties because money is cheap. And property means most likely you need to borrow a lot of money to do that purchase. But it's about the timing of when you buy, right? If the expectation is that interest rate is going to continue to go lower and lower and lower, you don't buy today, you buy tomorrow. So that's one thing. But nonetheless, because you have the expectation that tomorrow somebody will buy, it means that tomorrow the profit will be better. So if tomorrow's profit will be better, you're going to buy the stock today, right? So today's price will go up. Huh? So that's how stock market works. Stock market price for the future. The stock market don't price for today. So that's number one. Number two, interest rate sensitive sectors would be banks, lor, right? Lower interest rate means they make lesser money, lor, right? Because the central bank don't allow them to collect so much interest. But at the same time, they still have that many staff that they need to feed. You know, they still have the rent of the branches that they need to pay and whatnot. But having said that, that is on the normal borrowing business side of things. On the other hand, because of low interest rate environment, they can also borrow money at a cheap rate. And therefore, all these banks, they have their asset management arm, right? So all these fund managers, they will also go and leverage their portfolio. They go and borrow money. They're also going to buy up all these assets. They're going to buy gold. They're going to buy real estate. They're going to buy stocks. They're going to buy bond. And all these asset classes are going to increase in price. We call it inflation in asset prices, right? So when this happens, the banks will also make money. But whether how much the bank makes money, then this is where your research, your own analysis needs to come in to see whether the bank is higher in terms of borrowing or they are bigger in terms of investments. So the big investment banks usually have more investment portfolio lah. But your typical bank, like let's say Malaysian banks, Malaysian banks typically have more borrowing business than the investment side. So you need to balance these two to see which one will give you the highest profit, and that's how you put money in the banks. Right? Number three, this is a little bit more on the forex side of things. In the past 2-3 years, when the interest rate is so high, we have already seen the US dollar shot up to the roof, right? 480 at the highest. At one point, we were even thinking about 5 ringgit per US dollar. If rate cut is going to come, the opposite will be the storyline, will be the narrative for 2024, 2025, right? So US dollar may drop. And, you know, with PMX doing all the right things, striking all the right notes, FDI coming in and all that, I don't know. I'm hopeful for our ringgit to actually perform better in the coming years. And when the ringgit starts to strengthen, it will also catch a lot of attention of foreign investors. And investors will say, hey, if US dollar is not giving me the yield that I want, why not I put the money somewhere else? And it seems like Malaysia is doing quite well. Why not I put money there? So because of that, it actually solidifies my own thesis, my personal thesis, that actually in 2024, I'm quite optimistic with our own country. And for that, I'm actually quite proud. Would I say proud? Optimistic. Optimistic is the word, right? And I hope for the best for Malaysia in 2024. Some more, we've got new lineups on the cabinet already, right? So hopefully all these people, they are capable people, you know, they do all the right things and don't do stupid things. If that is okay, I think we're on the right track. Okay. The other thing that I want to point out is on this thing called real interest rate. How many of you understand what is real interest rate? If you know what is real interest rate, can you type 3 in the comment box? And if you don't know what is real interest rate, can you type 4 in the comment box? So I know how to explain this point to you guys. In economic terms, there are, when we talk about interest rate, right? If you talk about those experts, then they will give you that blank eye and then they'll ask, what interest rate are you talking about? Are you talking about nominal interest rate or are you talking about real interest rate? So what is real interest rate and what is nominal interest rate? Nominal interest rate is the interest rate that you see on newspaper, the interest rate that you see on your FD, the interest rate that you see in your daily life. That's, those are called nominal interest rate. It's just the rate that is published to you to see, for you to see, right? It's very easy to understand. Now, what is real interest rate? And this is what economists usually use to do their thesis and do their policies and all that. A real interest rate is to take the nominal interest rate and minus your inflation rate. The result is called a real interest rate. I give you an example. Today, if you put money in FD, let's say you get 4% interest. 4% interest. But the inflation of the country, let's say the official number is 3%. So 4% minus 3%, the real interest rate is 1%. That means if you put 1,000 ringgit into FD, even though on the bank statement says that you get 4% interest, but the real interest rate you are getting is only 1%. Your money is only growing at a 1% rate. And this real interest rate is what really matters for economies and for central bankers. Okay, now you guys understand already, right? I'm going to go into my main point of this story. Okay, the Fed always say that their target interest rate, their target inflation rate is 2%, right? No matter what they do, they want to bring inflation down to 2%. But they also have one indicator that is less talked about, but if you are in the industry, then you know what is their target. They have a target of a real interest rate of 0.5%. That is their target. So if you look at the whole situation in the US right now, today the interest rate is at 5.5%, right? And with the inflation today now is about 3 over percent. So 5 minus 3. So it is still at around 2% level, you know. It's still at 2% level. So therefore, it is still a very high number. And it needs to make it bigger or make this smaller so that the number can reach 0.5%. And that is the thing that very few people are talking about today. Oh, okay. Why 0.5%? I also don't know. That's the target that they want to do. So be it lah. They want 0.5, then 0.5 lah. They want 1, then 1. This is their economy, so it's their problem. Coming back to what stocks to look at or what assets to look at when the interest rate cuts happen, right? So number one, we talk about property sector. Number two, we talk about banking sector. Number three, now, when you have a lot of money to spare, and you are looking for something to buy where you can grow your money at a very fast pace. Let's say, for example, you are limited to just buy equities, just buy stocks only. What kind of stocks would you buy? Would you buy REITs? Would you buy defensive stocks? Or would you buy growth stocks? 1, 2, 3. Can you share your answer with me? What is your opinion? Do you buy REITs? Do you buy defensive stocks? Do you buy growth stocks? If the interest rate is low and it's very easy for you to borrow money to invest. Growth stocks, not because you are greedy. Not because you are greedy, therefore you want to buy growth stocks. If your answer is greedy, then forever just buy growth stock only. There's no other thing that you should buy because growth stock just gives you the best return. And for greedy people, that's what you should do. It's not for that reason. The reason for growth stock is because when interest rate is down, you don't know when it is going to go up again. And because you have this uncertainty, you want to quickly make the money as fast as you can so that you can get out of the market. And in order to achieve that, the best thing for you to invest is growth stock. That should be the reason why you go into growth stock and not because of greed. If you want greed, you take money, you go Genting, Highland, I think faster. You can make money faster over there. Right? So growth stocks, which means to say, if interest rate really starts coming down 2024, 2025, the magnificent, the so-called Magnificent Seven on the NASDAQ, on the US stock market today, I just don't know how expensive they will be in 2024, 2025. And what I'm trying to point towards is that actually the economic situation is still pretty bad. And I already say that this could be a prelude to a recession in the future because of those reasons. And if people are playing this story and go and buy the growth stocks and make tech stocks so expensive, if things turn wrong, the reality will come. It will hit. And it's going to be very ugly. And that is my point. Right? So what you should do? Should you then be so smart and say, hey, Frankie already said like that already, so better stay away. Don't play, you know. If things go bad, I'm going to lose all my money. Well, that can be one way. But in investment, there's this thing called opportunity cost, right? Opportunity cost means the cost for you not doing something. That is opportunity cost. So if you don't invest, but if the market keeps going up, your opportunity cost can be quite expensive because you lose out that hype. You lose out that momentum over there. But what you need to be aware is that if you keep yourself invested and you play along with the storyline that low interest rate means good for the market, yeah, inflation is going to come out, but who cares for the time being? I'm just going to make money. You just need to be very alert and keep your eyes open big, big all the time and look out for all these announcements, company announcements. If you see any slight weakness in their announcement or whatsoever or their narrative, right, just take the money and go. I think that's the best strategy for 2024. Because I do not know when the worst will come, but at least right now, all I can see on the surface is just all the good things, right? What are the good things? Let me recap again. The Fed indicated cut in interest rate. Number two, US election year. Number three, inflation is down because your commodity prices is also starting to ease, right? In 2023, the biggest problem was the Ukraine and Russian war, which disrupted all the food supply, you know, stuff like that. Right now, things are a little bit better. All these new crops are coming. So the harvest is normalizing. Oil prices now also dropped to, I think, close to $70 already. If it falls down further, I think it will be good for inflation, but not so good for Malaysia because Malaysia, we export a lot of oil. So so high oil price is good for Malaysia, right? But anyway, I'm talking about the whole market itself. So on the surface, everything looks good. But we all know that, yeah, if you dig down a little bit deeper, actually inside are all worms and maggots and whatnot, right? Maggots, sorry. Yeah. So I think that's all for today. I think I have shared a very, very heavy topic. But what do you guys think? You guys think today's topic is very heavy or do you think it's okay? It's quite casual and yeah, you would like this kind of content. If you think it's casual and you like more of this kind of content, can you type 5 in the comment box? If you think it is too heavy and you don't like it, you already zone out, please type 6 in the comments so we can do a comparison and then we can tilt our content in the future as well. But since we are talking about US stocks so much, right? And you know, we are talking about riding with this momentum and just ride on this good sentiment in the market. Why not I take a little bit of time to just talk about the sponsor of today's podcast, right? I want to thank M Plus Global, where the parent company is Malacca Securities. They are more than 60 years in Malaysia. So M Plus Global, if you open an account in December and if you deposit money of 2,000 ringgit and above, you would get a Palantir share for free. Why Palantir share is we really go and fight for it for our audience, you guys out there. Because if you all follow me long enough, you know I like Palantir, right? And Palantir for the past few days has dropped to like $17 and whatnot. Oh, so happy. I wish it can go down further. But with the announcement of a potential rate cut, I think no more lah. No more going down already. Maybe today it may go up to 18, 19 bucks and perhaps even cross 20 in the future. But the point I want to make is this, is exactly this demonstration, right? I'm not even talking about fundamentals anymore. I'm just telling you what, interest rate cut, right? Our price just jalan only. And that will be the common sentiment that everyone will have, right? They will just throw fundamental away and say, hey, because number one, interest rate cut, and number two, I have money now. Number three, I need to buy growth stock. And number four, I like this particular stock, so just chunk, right? But it's a very dangerous game, especially if you don't know what you're doing. It can be a very dangerous game. So whatever that I mentioned is not investment advice, and you definitely need to talk to somebody who is expert in the market to help you to sort this thing out. Because we are in a situation where it is very fluid, and things might change overnight, just like how Wednesday is so different from Thursday. All right, just yesterday, everyone is very sad, very gloomy, recession, da-da-da. Thursday, everyone very happy. Okay, I think that's all for today. Let's open up the floor for Q&A. Oh, I see a lot of five. Thank you very much. Hopefully we can curate more of such content, and then I'll bring Peter in to do this together with me so I'm not so lonely. The link is not working, 404 error. If the link is not working, don't worry. You see that code over there, T30E, right? So you just go to their usual website, mplusglobal.com or whatever, I'm not very sure. And you do your usual sign up, and there's a column that asks, is there any promotional code? You just put T30E, and then once you get through it, you bang in 2,000 ringgit, you will still get your Palantir share. Okay, so let's open up the floor for Q&A. Let me start from the top, okay? Are you Frankie alone again? It's okay. Peter has some interesting project going on. Actually, he's in the office. He's just doing something else. Discuss the Fed bond auction. I think I talked too much about stocks. I didn't really touch on bonds. Yeah, this is a good point over here. One more reason I think why the Fed gives you such a long horizon punya guidance is exactly like this comment over here. It's the bond market. You know how bond market has been bashed down so badly that at one point the 10-year bond yield has increased up to 5%? So if your bond yield is 5%, that is the benchmark that the banks are going to use to borrow and lend money, which is very expensive. So one way to bring it down is to make the market excited so that they go and buy bonds. When the bonds become more expensive, the yield will come down, right? So when yield comes down, the Fed don't need to do anything. Also, it comes down to 4%, 3%, 2%. Yeah, everybody happy because that is the benchmark that you are going to use to borrow money, to lend money. I think that is another reason why the Fed gives you the narrative lah. Thoughts about future prospect of TMB being carved out, government liberalizing the electric market on, and who stands to gain from this? Actually, this is not a new topic. It happened before in 2018 when Yeo Byin was our, what minister? I forgot already. Some very long name one, I remember. So she actually proposed that. She wanted to break the monopoly of TMB and make it a liberal market where everybody can come to the energy sector and do distribution and whatnot. But subsequently, you know lah, all the Sheraton happened and all that, then everything stops, right? But would TMB really be carved out and all that? I think that is beyond my pay grade. I don't know. But let's paint a picture of if they are carved out and if they are not carved out, right? If they are not carved out, I think the government is going to give them a lot of pressure to be very efficient, right? Because they are probably going to go to Tenaga and say, hey, you know, I've done it once. It doesn't rule out the possibility that I will do it again. So you better be efficient, be on the ball, and make sure you deliver the results to the rakyat. Then I keep your business as it is. So I think that's one scenario. And to address that scenario means that maybe not so much margin from Malaysia anymore. And that is good because that will push Tenaga to think outside of the box. Maybe they want to invest their money overseas, which they have already done during the 2018 period. You know, they are starting to go into the UK. They're starting to find more renewable energy projects to do outside of Malaysia. So I think that is a good pressure to Tenaga itself. But if it is being carved out, then yes, number one, you may look at who could be the possible players in the distribution business, in the generation business and things like that. And number two, because you are not talking about one company distributing energy anymore, you're talking about multiple companies, then is it really a wastage, right? I can just have one cable to this area, but now I have like 5-6 cables all going to the area. And every cable is only like 20% utilized. So that is another issue that I think we need to address if we want to go towards that path. But nonetheless, there are winners and losers, no matter which side of the stories become reality. But we can only play scenario because we don't know what's going to happen. Right? What are your thoughts on KLSE? Glove stock seems to be jumping up. What will you be investing in? Okay. Glove stock is very interesting right now. Apparently, COVID is coming back. We also have people around us starting to fall sick. So that is one of the reasons why glove stocks are going up. But what I want to say is, glove stocks today are very different from glove stocks in 2020. I know 2020, a lot of people made money from glove stocks. But in 2020, Malaysia was the world's largest glove producer. We command 60% market share globally. For every 10 pairs of gloves, 6 pairs come from Malaysia. That's how big we were in 2020. Fast forward to 2023. If you recall, we had a shortage of gloves, right? Malaysia couldn't keep up, right? Even though we are the largest player. New players started to come in. We have people from Thailand. We have people from China. Even in American side as well and things like that. So in 2023, right? You don't really need to buy gloves from Malaysia anymore. In fact, China's market share has grown double from 10% in 2020. Today is more than 20%. And you know, China like to throw prices, right? If you want to buy cheap stuff, you just go to China, right? So in today's market, there are a lot of choices for people to choose when it comes to gloves. And that has somewhat hurt Malaysia's position as the world's largest glove producer. So I think, yes, while this COVID thing is coming back, it's helping the share price, helping the sentiment and whatnot. But it is not going to be as great as the past. So that's my opinion. Sorry. Okay, if the Fed decreases the interest rate, will our BNM follow suit? Yes. If we don't follow, then suddenly we'll have too much money coming to Malaysia. Then our ringgit becomes so strong, it will start to hurt our economy. Because don't forget, Malaysia economy is a export-based economy. Any thoughts on buy now, pay later related stocks? Not really. Buy now, pay later are usually being done by super app ecosystem kind of stocks. So people like Grab, people like Lazada, Shopee, it's their game. Why? Because for buy now, pay later, in order to give you that loan, they need to know enough information about you in order to be confident to give you the loan. And the people who have that kind of data are companies like Grab, Shopee, and all that. Even banks don't have that kind of data. So buy now, pay later is a very niche kind of investment. Why is Palantir stock going up from today? I've already explained already. Because the market is very hot right now. Nothing to do with fundamental. Right, any more questions? Whoa, it seems like today can end earlier. Very good. All right, any more questions? If there are no more questions, I'm going to count to three. Then we are going to end today's session. 1, 2, 2.5, 3. Right, thank you very much. Thank you very much for keeping me company tonight. It has been a great night tonight. I have a new video at 9:30 tonight. Stay tuned. It's going to be a very interesting interview. I think this guy is more powerful than Jalil Rashid. So stay tuned. it has got something to do with your grocery one. So stay tuned to it. Yeah, hope to see you guys again next week. Construction next. You guys are every time like that one. I say end already, then the question starts to come out. Okay, last question. Then I'm going to call it a night already. Construction next year. I remember a couple of weeks ago, I was a bit skeptical about construction, but now I'm slightly more confident, right? Because we are seeing a lot of news coming out to say that, oh, you know, I want to build LRT in Johor. I want to execute LRT in Penang. I want to build high-speed rail even, right? Because, you know, the top people wants it suddenly. Yeah, so it will be an exciting sector to look at in Malaysia in 2024. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks again for your company tonight. I really appreciate it. And see you guys next week. Good night.